It's time for the First Take Vegas Take, brought to you by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
All right, we check in just about every day with our pals from First Take at this time of the day at 4 o'clock. If you don't know, brand new show on the ESPN app, also ESPN News. First Take, your take, Jason Fitz, who we have to get on, I think this week, we're going to have to get him on, to promote his new show that's starting on the 20th, but it's basically listening, playing back, getting the highlights of First Take in the morning and reacting to it later in the day. So we'll play along. Stephen A. this morning discussed Antonio Brown, who yet again was on social media, and of all the dumb things he's done to this point on social media that have been counterproductive for his rep, for his career, right? Ultimately for his family, because he's losing money. He claims he's as rich as he wants to claim, and he is, but just pissed away like $30 million with both the it was actually upwards of it was over $30 million with the Raiders and a large chunk of change with the Patriots because he can't stay off of social media. The dude has no judgment, no common sense. Plus, he's uncontrollable. I've said multiple times now, there's something wrong with him. This is one you don't come back from. If you didn't see it the other day, he's going off. There's some sort of custody issue, familial deal. Police in Hollywood, Florida are over, and he gets the aftermath, and he's just, for 3.5 minutes, just laying into these police officers who are doing nothing but their job, and they're trying to ignore him, and he is just pushing the envelope more and more and more. This is such a bad look, and Stephen A. just had enough this morning and went off.
They could have arrested him. They did no such thing. They all walked away. They got into their cop cars, and they drove off. And he was screaming all kinds of obscenities at them.
In front of his kids.
In front of his kids. He seemed completely out of control. But for you yourself to put that on video for the world to see while you're supposedly trying to get back into the National Football League, how does that possibly help you?
It doesn't. And you know what? I'm not the guy to sit here and go, hey, got to have common sense when you use social media. I put stuff out on the reg that doesn't help me. Believe me. So I get it. I get it. And I'm pushing 50. I'm an idiot. But I can tell you this, and I get maybe it's the fact that he is wealthy. Money can run out, though. I can tell you, if I was on my last legs as far as my chosen profession, and he just doesn't get it, he doesn't believe that, if folks around the NFL are repeatedly telling you through their actions, releasing you, that you can't do stuff like this on social media, then you got to stop. And it's not just, this wasn't, you know, using bad language. He actually went off. He went after one of the accusers. He's embroiled in this whole thing. He's going off and after one of the, like, what are you doing? This was, we're talking about a league that has had a struggle with fans, with our president, with its players, over a massive issue, and it wasn't the anthem. It was law enforcement. It was Colin Kaepernick protesting bad law enforcement, irresponsible law enforcement. Now, that got the narrative on that got changed, but they've had to deal with this. The league and the teams have had to deal with this around Cap, who actually had the right to protest. Some will say, hey, you know what? His case is legitimate. This is absurd. You're just a complete jerk-off out on the street calling cops bitches and dropping N-bombs and doing it for 3.5 minutes, and you're like, yeah, I'll show them. I'm going to put this out on social media. What are you thinking? Keep going, Stephen A.
He's all over the place. You can't predict anything. You don't know what you're getting. And the one thing you do know is that you can't trust him because he's so addicted to that camera phone and so addicted to being on social media. You never know what he's going to say about you next. You got to stay away. I'm sorry to say it.
I'm all about second chances, third chances. I'm probably one of the most pro athlete, pro player radio hosts in the country. I don't think I'm, you know, approaching the okay, boomer, you know, mad at athletes all the time. I get it. I'm a psycho too. I get it. People make mistakes. social media is something new to deal with for athletes. But by the way, I will always go back to the point I made about probably 8 or 9 years ago when athletes were saying, hey, we've got social media now. Now we can cut out the traditional media and they're not going to skew our message anymore. And I remember saying at the time, I don't think you guys are aware how many times we filter you, how many times you say stuff that is stupid, and we look at each other, we're like, whoa, I don't think that person wants that out. And you go up to the person and go, listen, you sure you want this out there? Oh, you're right, now that I think about it. So media would actually save athletes a lot of times. All right, here you go, AB. There's no filter. Do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. And he's doing it. And I support what Kaepernick does and is talking about with cleaning up law enforcement, right? I believe 99% of law enforcement, good people, do their jobs, but there's a whatever. If it's 1% or 0.1%, there's an element that is giving all the other law enforcement a bad name. So I'm a backer of Kaepernick, but I'm also a backer of law enforcement. If I was a fan in a market that was interested in signing Antonio Brown, I would be protesting out in front. You know what? You don't come back from this. And I don't want to hear some apology. Done. And any team that signs him, screw off. This one is, I mean, there's a lot of inexcusable stuff close to it with Antonio Brown. This was it. Dunsky.
Make sure to tune in each day at 10 a.m. to ESPN News or the ESPN Radio app for First Take, Your Take with Jason Fitz. Now, back to Cofield and Company.
All right, VGK has dropped the puck in Buffalo, scoreless. About 5 minutes in, we're at Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch. This is your spot for Golden Knights road games, home games. You come in, you wear your gear, you get a free beer. So come on down. Angels hanging out. It's Cofield. Joe Esposito, Coach Joe knows. So we got a little bit of time here to talk some college basketball.
All right.
We could do it for hours and hours and hours. We're freaking junkies. Joe, of course, longtime college basketball coach around the country. Joe, connected to everyone, has us hooked up today with USC coach Andy Enfield at the end of the hour, so looking forward to talking some Pac-12 basketball. So what's going on, buddy? You just I looked over, you and your son are here. You get a pizza. I start ranting and raving about Stephen A. I talk a little Raider Stadium, and I swear to God, it was like 8 minutes, the pizza's gone.
You know, sometimes you're hungry.
Sometimes you're hungry.
I mean, every now and then, we don't have a lot of food in the house, so, you know, this is an honor to be here and get some free pizza.
Was it an even split, or do you guys start fighting over the last slice?
I don't know. He'll probably say that I ate more, but, you know how it is. You know, dad should get more. You know what I mean?
I agree.
I'm his dad.
I agree.
I brought him into this world.
Show a little respect.
A little respect.
They bring over a little garlic bread, and there's, you know, six pieces. You want four, he gets two.
That's exactly how it should go.
It's the way it works.
No doubt.
All right. Well, I want to get into what's going on with UNLV basketball now. A little resurgence, 5-6. We'll get to Mountain West talk here in about 10 minutes. But you're doing a top 21 every day, right? You're blackjack. Top 21. And I know you were chatting with Scott Drew the other day. We're going to try to get him on the show down the road. You have been hot and heavy about Baylor for a while, and they keep winning games. They got a giant win over Kansas, and now the AP recognizes that and actually bumped them ahead of Duke, and now they're number two in the country.
Well, and they finally woke up. I've been trying to tell them. I mean, I hashtagged them, and they didn't obviously pay attention. You know, Jeff Goodman even jumped on the Baylor bandwagon. I mean, when you just look at it, you're between Duke and the Zags, and you look at Baylor. Baylor has won 12 in a row, and they just beat Texas Tech on the road, which I'm going to tell you, I coached there. That is a hard place to play. When you get that thing rocking, Texas Tech's better than most. And then they go to Kansas, which is even harder to win at Kansas, and they beat Kansas. They're number one in the net. And they're 5-0 against ranked teams. Now, why wouldn't they be the number one team in the country? Like, when you think about Duke, yeah, Duke beat Kansas, but it was the first game of the year. They beat Michigan State, who's been so up and down, and just got their brains beat in at Purdue, and they beat Georgetown. Duke doesn't have the resume that Baylor has. And the same thing with Gonzaga. Yeah, they're 18-1. They beat BYU. They beat Oregon on the road. They beat Arizona on the road. They're 7 in net. So I think Baylor, hands down, is the best team in that league. I think they're the best team in the country at this point. And the thing I really like about Baylor is they're deep. They got great depth. They can go eight guys, and you see no drop-off with their team. Their two toughest road games are gone. Their last game of the season at Morgantown, West Virginia, that's going to be their toughest road game. And then after that, if they can just hang on and take care of business at home, they're going to win the Big 12.
Which is just about unheard of, although Texas Tech made major inroads last year with Kansas. Where do you think Kansas is right now?
Well, I think they're confused. I mean, I don't know what they're doing as far as now with Dotson being hurt. They got a tough game tonight. I mean, they're going to play at Oklahoma tonight, and Dotson's got a hit pointer. If he doesn't play, they're both coming off losses. You know, they lost – Kansas lost to Baylor. Oklahoma lost to Iowa State. And, you know, when you look at it, Oklahoma has beaten Kansas the last two times that Kansas has gone to Norman. So – I think Oklahoma's going to win that game tonight, and if Kansas loses two in a row, it would kind of be a surprise, but I think Oklahoma's going to win, but I don't know what's going to happen with Dotson. It's going to be a big part because he's really that big factor for them. He runs the show for Kansas.
Looks like everyone's playing Oklahoma. The number down to 4.5. Do you think any of the stuff swirling around the Kansas program has been a distraction?
I think definitely a distraction for the coaches. I mean, I think anytime you got some allegations out there and there's that unknown, I think it's always out there, you know, just giving guys something to talk about in the locker room, the coaches, not knowing the history of what's going to happen. And, yeah, I think that definitely does play a factor in all of it for a lot of these teams, not just Kansas.
You got your top 21 in front of you?
Yeah, I got
my top
20.
What are we looking at on the back end? We got any new teams in? Anyone drop out?
No question we got somebody in the back end that I think is a team that needs to be looked at. That's Northern Iowa.
Wow.
University of Northern Iowa, they're 14-2. You know, they lost to West Virginia. They have two losses. They lose to West Virginia by 5, and they lost to Illinois State, which was kind of a surprise, by 6. But, you know, they won at Colorado. They won at South Carolina. They've got a great sophomore in A.J. Green, whose dad is one of the assistants. He's averaging 18 points a game. And they got a great junior who's averaging 14. So they're a team that you can contend. I would not want to play Northern Iowa. Remember I said this now, because when the NCAA bracket comes out, if you got Northern Iowa that first game, good luck, because they can make shots, and they're going to be somebody to really be reckoned with. I got Seton Hall back in there. They got a tough game against Butler. They're sitting at 20.
He's doing a really good job.
He is
Miles
doing a
Powell
good job.
Hasn't been completely healthy since he got rocked in the head. They're also down one of their good bigs. He's done a really good job.
He has done a good job. We're looking at Musselman sitting there. The Musk Bus is sitting at 19. And then we got Stanford. You know, Stanford's an interesting beast. You know, they've got a lot of wins, but a lot of those wins that Stanford has is home bye wins. You know, they're 3-0 in the league. They're 14-2 overall. And their only two losses are Kansas and Butler. Those are the only two games Stanford has lost. So they've got a decent win. They beat Oklahoma. Their next game is at UCLA, and then they go to USC right after that. So they got two tough games. February is going to be a bear for Stanford. They got to play Oregon twice, Colorado twice, Washington and Arizona. So we're going to see how they end up. But right now, I thought Stanford should get a little love, and I put him at 18.
And that's the problem with trying to figure out teams and rank teams when they haven't played, you know, half their conference slate, because a lot of times they get an easy front end and they haven't played the big teams yet.
No question.
And the other problem with Stanford, they not only lost to Kansas, they weren't even competitive in the game.
Yeah, they
were. I mean, the final score was 16, but they were getting slaughtered.
You know, and that has a lot to do with the scheduling, to see how the scheduling is going to go for you. You know, a lot of teams get lucky. Some of the schools don't play a traditional conference where they play everybody twice.
Oof.
You know, you don't know who exactly you're going to get. And there's a lot of games out there that you're hoping you don't get when you're in that situation. So I like the true play everybody twice. I mean, I think the college basketball, every league should do that, and I think hopefully someday it'll get to that point.
Yeah, non-con for Stanford, San Fran by 8, San Diego by 3, San Jose State, Wilmington, Bill and Mary, Maryland Eastern Shore, Santa Clara's not bad. Long Beach State's having a rough year, Fullerton, and Montana. What the hell happened to Michigan State the other day?
You know, that
was going on the road and hitting the buzzsaw, but, you know, they were down like 10-12.
Well, it was 19.
Like 7 minutes left, and they just got just freaking annihilated the last 8 minutes.
You know, it was 19-4, get off the start. And then they got down 22 in the first half. They get down 29 in the second half. Mm. And I'm going to tell you, when Purdue gets rolling in that building, it's a small building. The fans are right on you. I remember sitting there and just getting killed. I had a green suit on. And they were calling me, I don't know, Grimace or something. I don't know what they were calling me, but I know it was bad.
That's your purple suit.
Yeah, that was my purple
I've
one.
I've seen the purple.
The green one was bad. I mean, I never wore it. Put it this way. It hurt my feelings so bad, I never wore that green suit again.
Is that right?
It was terrible. I was scared. They're all on me. You know, they're offering me hamburgers and stuff. I don't know why they're offering me food. I don't get it. But it's a hard place to play. Michigan State just looked flat. They looked tired. It was not a typical Izzo team. And his two best players, you know, Winston gets 10 points, shoots horrible, 4 for 13. This doesn't make a 3. Misses all 5 threes. Tillman's terrible. He's 8 for 8. I'm sorry, he had 8 points and 8 rebounds. And Izzo at the end of the game said, it was my worst beating as a coach. And you're hearing these terms on and on and on. Look at North Carolina. Look what Roy said his last game. Now, the question is, you know, the great question you asked me, how does Clemson break an 0-for-59 streak? Go to Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really what's going on there.
My topic on that one is I just wonder what it feels like for the Clemson program. And that's, I've never heard of anything like that in sports where you never win. I mean, they're a power, but my God, North Carolina has to have one game they're not up for. 59 straight freaking losses? But to your point, it says a lot about what's going on right now with North Carolina. They just don't have a great team. They didn't have a whole lot around Cole Anthony. Without him there, they're just – I mean, they're one of the – I mean, am I crazy? Without Cole Anthony, they're like one of the four worst teams in the ACC.
Well, and it's getting worse. It's like when bad happens, it's like what else could happen to them? You know, Roy after the game tells the athletic director to fire him. I mean, for a coach to sit there – now, you got to be pretty secure in your job to be able to say something like that. And Roy, of course, is. But one of his better players right now, Brandon Robinson – gets in a car accident. He gets hit by a drunk driver, so I don't know what his status is going to be. And then one of their longtime assistants, C.B. McGrath, on Monday, UNC Wilmington fires him after 2.5 years. The guy's only been there 2.5 seasons. Why would you fire him right now? And they fire him right now. He was 5-14. He got an 0-6 start in the league, and they fire him. So there's so much bad around that program right now, they can't shake it. But if Cole Anthony comes back, and you know what happens tournament time, you never know. Maybe they'll shake some, you know, they'll shake something up and they'll make a little run.
Vanderbilt has had some players the last couple of years. I mean, Darius Garland's a really good player. Obviously, a top 10 pick in the NBA. They lost him to injury last year. Stackhouse has a pretty, nice team in terms of building blocks, but now he's got this kid, Nesmith, who's down for the year, too.
Yeah, you know, it's been bad luck for them. I don't know. Maybe it's the elevated floor. I mean, maybe they're falling off that floor. I don't know what it is. But he's had some bad luck. And, you know, just in general, the whole SEC seems real weak. You know, when you look at the top of the SEC, Auburn's 3-0. And we had Bruce Pearl on last week, and, you know, he was positive, and he's won the games he needs to win. He beat Georgia after he had our interview here, you know. That's undefeated after you talk to the Cofield and Company crew. You go undefeated. But LSU's 3-0 in the conference, but it's worked out good for them with their schedule. They got some bad losses, LSU. Everybody's talking about why isn't LSU ranked. And, you know, they lost to VCU, Utah State, and East Tennessee. So Kentucky's 3-0, Arkansas. I just think the league's down. Florida's been a disappointment. I thought Florida would be a lot better. They lost to Missouri on Sunday, 91-75. Tennessee's down. Alabama's down. Mississippi State's 0-3 in the league. They're down. A&M's been down all year. South Carolina hasn't won a game in conference. So I think the SEC's down, and I think Vanderbilt's going to be in for another long conference season.
Coach Joe knows. Joe Esposito hanging out with us here at Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch. We got hockey on right now as still scoreless, about 12.5 in. VGK on the road against the Sabres. Come on down. Happy hour's cooking right now. Food and drink is low as $4. The meatballs are $4. Personal one-topping pizza, just $5. The specialty personal pizzas, like the Calitalia, just $7. We've got a big one in the Big 12. You mentioned Kansas and Oklahoma. Huggy, Bob Huggins, and his Mountaineers are taking on TCU. TCU's catching a little bit of fire here. What do you think?
Well, they're catching fire because they played Iowa State, Kansas State, and Oklahoma State. They haven't played the big dogs yet. So when they play the big dogs, you're going to find out more about them. But you know, I just think that West Virginia's coming off that huge win against Texas Tech at home, beat them by 12, and I don't think you're going to beat Huggins at that place. I mean, that's another tough place to play. I remember the first time I went in there, they had this guy dressed like Paul Bunyan or something. I don't know what he is, their mascot, and he shoots this rifle.
He's got the musket.
He's got a there it is.
Yeah,
there's a musket.
I grew up in the Big East in the Atlantic 10, so I'm very familiar with the horrors of West Virginia. Well, the musket.
Well,
that's psycho.
I'm going to tell you this: me being a New York City guy, as soon as I heard that musket go off, because I know what's coming, I laid on the ground. I didn't know what to do. I get all nervous. I was like, I think somebody's shooting in this arena, and you know if they're going to shoot, I'm probably going to get hit because I'm one of the bigger guys on the bench.
Not going to miss you.
So yeah, I'm you know, hopefully Adam Hill was there.
He's a little bigger.
He might hit him.
He can cover you up.
He can cover me up.
So TCU is actually an interesting story. Jamie Dixon's done a really good job there. One of their lead players now is a guy, Desmond Bain. And I remember TCU coming in to face you guys. I think it was year one with Marvin Menzies. And, you know, the year wound up with not a great year. You guys didn't have a ton of players. But you guys went nip and tuck with the TCU team, and they've taken off since. And I remember seeing Bain, and I'm like, how the hell did this guy? He was like a April commit. He was like a two-star, maybe a three-star out of Illinois. And TCU grabbed him, and now he's turned into a borderline all-conference player.
You know, there's a lot of guys out there that you just see that, you know, that you never can really judge a guy's heart and how much work ethic they have. And, you know, you only see a guy so many times. As a college basketball coach, you have seven opportunities to visit a young man or go see him play. And, you know, you just never know what's going to happen. And it's a crapshoot for a lot of guys. Yeah, you can pull out the Cole Anthony's of the world and the James Wisemans of the world. You can pull out those great, great players. But getting that 150 to 175, 180 player is always really, really difficult. And they got a guy that just kept developing, got better, and he's done a good job there. And they've gotten good players.
Yeah.
And they're getting fan support back. And so TCU has turned the corner, and Jamie Dixon's a real good coach. He played there, and he's got a lot of love for that program. And they're going to be a factor here in the next couple of years.
Pay the bills quickly here. Joe Esposito sticking around. We're going to talk to Andy Enfield, the coach at USC, in about 15 minutes. But on the way back, I'm telling you, one of the best rivalries in the country, and it is a developing rivalry, is San Diego State and Fresno State. These teams don't like each other, and they're hooking up tonight in Fresno.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Coach Joe is here. Let's talk a little Mountain West Conference basketball.
Yeah, let's talk about it, because that pizza, by the way, that pizza was thin crust, by the way.
Yeah.
You make it sound like I ate a whole pizza. Thin crust.
I get it.
But when you lose your bet, I'm getting a thick Chicago-style pizza.
Oh, it's going to be a feast.
And
I'm in trouble.
You are in trouble because San Diego State is on fire.
A couple weeks ago, I said, and this was before San Diego State went to Utah State, like, let's stop with the San Diego State's going to go on beating stuff in the Mountain West Conference. They're going to lose some of these road tilts. They'll probably slip in at least a game at home. And then they went out and just smoke is a little strong. But they handled Utah State on the road pretty easily. So now I'm up against it. The over-under is 2.5 losses in the Mountain West Conference.
You know, I
got to get something going here. Come on, opposition. Fresno, tonight, let's go. It's a rivalry spot. You know, Hudson doesn't like the guys at San Diego State. The players don't like each other. Come on now. Get me back in this.
No, wasn't Hudson there? I mean, why doesn't he like them?
Well, you know, I was looking back at last year's game. San Diego State went on the road to Fresno the first time they met. And
good teams.
I got to get the order here correct, and I'll look it up. But I know there was a lot of chirping between the benches. Like, it got real nasty. Because, you know, Shelton, who played at San Diego State, he left with Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some bitterness. And, you know, both programs think, hey, that we know the other guy's secret. So the coaches, the players were talking an immense amount of trash. So this is a big rivalry.
It's a big rivalry.
It really is. San Diego State, I guess, is not real pleased that Hudson left. Like, maybe Hudson has some bitter feelings. You know, you can see it from Hudson. Hudson, I think Brian Dutcher's a really good head coach, but I think Hudson deserved that job as much or more than Dutcher. And I know Dutcher's been with Fisher for a longer time, but Hudson, I think, can have this feeling like, hey, I got overlooked. I got passed over. The whole program is built on defense. He's the DC. He's the guy. So I can see where there's a little bit of bitterness.
You know, but their defense is still doing pretty good now.
Their
opponents are only shooting 27% from three against San Diego State, and their defense has been tough, and that's been one of the things that's really helped them. And, you know, when you're an assistant coach and you're sitting 7 inches away from that head coach, you always think you have all the answers.
Yeah.
But then when it's your time to slide over, and I can remember when I did that, my first head job, it's a whole different ball game because you can get all the suggestions in the world, but you got to make those decisions. But, you know, Fresno being 5-11, they're 1-4 in conference. They got some great freshmen. You know, we've talked about these freshmen before. You know, Orlando Robinson is a really good player. I mean, in his last two games, his back-to-back double-doubles.
Well, let's break this down a little bit here, Joe, because you and I talked about this. His mom went to UNLV. Orlando Robinson grew up in Vegas and then prepped out of town last year. What the hell? How is he not at UNLV? Demarlis Slocum actually told me, he's like, yeah, I wish we had him.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe we didn't recruit him. You guys were all full with bigs last year?
You know, I think that we had, you know, he had a big sitting out. He had Shakur sitting out. You know, Marvin had another guy sitting out. Bungai was sitting out. He had a couple guys that were committed to come play. He had no scholarships left. And, you know, I think that's what kind of happened. It was a numbers game. I mean, we had so many big. Remember, JTT was a big. And where is he right now? He's at Baylor.
No. So, I don't have any issue with all the bigs. And we'll call Tomboy a big because he's a 3-4.
Yeah,
they all will say upgraded to Power 5. You're not gonna, but
you can't take everybody.
No, but at the end, Bungai is a project.
Yeah, he is,
and he's got some upside. He's not playing a whole lot of Grand Canyon either. Yeah. I don't think you can miss on a guy like Orlando Robinson, who looks like he's going to be an All Conference type player his last 2 years at Fresno, because you're stashing Bungai.
You know, and I understand what you're saying, but I heard a great interview yesterday by Eric Musselman where he said, you know, his form has always been 9 guys. You can't have 13 guys on scholarship that want to play, because after even a win, you go in that locker room and somebody's disappointed they didn't play. And a lot of this game is chemistry. A lot of this game is getting the guys to play together. And you can't play 13 guys. Just look at Baylor, who I think is the best team in the country now. They play 8 guys. And 8's pushing it. You know, can you go to 9? I don't know. So there's only so many guys you can take. I'm definitely going to tell you Orlando Robinson is good enough. You know, and if I'm Justin Hudson, I'm afraid of the thing that I hate the most. And you know what I hate the most? The portal. Because he's got 6 good freshmen, and they're going to start thinking, oh, maybe I can play at Baylor. Yeah. Well, maybe I can play at USC. And that portal can ruin that program.
I know. I don't think it's going to happen, because I don't think it'll happen to Hudson. I'll tell you this. I'm watching Wyoming over the weekend up there, covering the game UNLV at Wyoming, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, wait, there's a kid I saw last year on the Wyoming roster. They took the red shirt off like 13 games in because they were so beat up, which was horrifying. This kid, Trace Young, is like 6'9", 179.
I know who he is, yeah.
I mean, you can see this kid's going to be a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the offseason, Power 5, he transferred to Tennessee.
The portal.
Yeah, so if you're Edwards, you're like, what the hell? I stole this guy from a bunch of Power 5s. I get him here, and then I can't keep him. Now, I'll give you the other player angle in this one. This also makes the San Diego State-Fresno thing heated. Jordan Campbell's a guy on the Fresno roster. If I'm correct, he's played 1 game. He just got cleared.
He's played 1
now,
game.
Now, look at this 1 game. So, here's Jordan Campbell's story, though.
Mm-hmm.
He was at Oregon State. He was transferring. He was going to San Diego State. And then guess who stole him to go to Fresno?
Yeah, that's bad.
Hudson. So, you know they're annoyed with him. But I'll tell you this about Jordan Campbell. The upside, because he was a pretty highly touted, you know, top 125 guy. He didn't play well in the first game. But if you think Hudson likes him, the proof is he played 29 minutes in his first game. He went 2-14. Now, I know 2-14 is not great, but this kid's got a long leash, which means to me he's got some upside, and they're going to count on him as one of their main guys. So the Fresno team that UNLV saw and beat in double overtime, it's going to be a different team in the second half here.
It is going to be a different team, and they're going to use Jordan Campbell to give them a little bit more experience on the floor. They're going to give him the opportunity to be a leader for that group, because remember, they're playing 6 freshmen. Those 6 freshmen have scored 45% of their points. I mean, they got 500 of their, you know, 1,100 points this year. The freshmen are averaging 31 points a game. They're only scoring 69. I mean, I think that those freshmen need a leader like him, and I think that'll make their team better. They're going to beat some people now. Don't think they're going to go stay 1-whatever.
No,
I mean, they're
no.
1-4. They're going to beat some people, and they're going to get some confidence, and they're going to build that confidence. And remember, freshmen, by the time January conference season comes, they're really sophomores. I always said they're playing like sophomores, and you get them going. They've got a lot of games under their belt. They've got a lot of minutes, and I think you're going to see those guys develop, and I think Fresno's going to get a lot better, and their future is going to look really bright.
Joe's going to stick around. We're going to bring up the SC coach, Andy Enfield, in less than 5 here on Cofield & Company.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. You're listening to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling on to Pizza Rock. We got the hockey on. BGK taking on the Sabres, beginning of a long road trip. Coach Joe is down here at Green Valley Ranch Pizza Rock with us as we have a chance to check in
on some Pac-12 basketball. Andy Enfield runs the program at Southern Cal, and he's up on Cofield and Company. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, let's chat about what's gone on in the first half of the season for you guys. You guys are off to a good start, and now you got some momentum, just beating the rival UCLA by 11 with a really good defensive effort.
Yeah, our players have played excellent defense most of the season. We had a great win at Pauley Pavilion, a sold-out crowd against UCLA, who's exceptionally talented. We played a very complete game. I'm very proud of our players, a tough place to play. But we've had a lot of good wins this early season. We're a long way to go.
Coach, you guys have it's Joe, man. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Coach, you've had some good quality wins. You know, you've had four true road wins, you know, beating Nevada, beating Washington State, UCLA, TCU. And, you know, I look at your schedule, and eight of the last 10 games you've been on the road. Was that by design to work on these young guys to get them on the road, or how did that all happen?
Well, we had the Pac-12 to thank for the three games to start the season on the road. We played three road games to open league play, so it wasn't by design. We also played a neutral site game against LSU, which we were fortunate to win at the buzzer. So we have some big road wins, and gave our young players immediate experience how to handle that. And fortunately, we're 4-1 in true road games. We're 3-1 on neutral court. So it feels great to be back at the Galen Center Thursday night against Cal, because we've had two home games the last 5 weeks.
Well, we're going to guarantee a win against Cal, and I'll tell you why. I'm going to tell you why at the end of the show. But before we get into that, Coach, Val Victorian out of high school. Tell us about it. What classes were you taking?
Well, you're questioning his background,
Coach.
Well, I was fortunate to have two parents as school teachers in our school system. So I was able to do pretty well in high school at Shippensburg High School in Pennsylvania. But it was a lot of fun growing up in a small town. It gave me a great perspective of what's important in life, the family, the small things in life. And now that you're in a major city, you have to always go back to your home roots and realize what's important.
Joe, were you lower half of your high school class, or
you know,
how'd you do?
I didn't want to tell. I didn't want to tell you this, but I got to strike back a little bit. If you read my bio, you'd probably see that I actually was Val Victorian too. So
is that right?
Oh, come on, man! Of course.
Wow, I had no idea.
Andy and I used to go to school together. So, hey, Coach, let's talk.
You hide it well.
Let's talk about something that is really important, and that's recruiting. And you guys have done an incredible job recruiting. And you know, every good recruiter that I always said has a beautiful wife. And if people don't know, your wife is an ex-model and one a famous model. And you had a great signing in 2020, Evan Mobley. Tell us about Evan and what you expect to get out of him in your program next year.
Well, to answer your first question, yeah, I was a pretty good recruiter back in the day to somehow land Amanda as my wife. But when you become a head coach, Joe, as you know this, the head coach needs a great coaching staff. And Jason Hart is one of the best assistant coaches in the country. He'll be a great head coach one day. Played 9 years in the NBA from Los Angeles. Chris Kapko has been on numerous staffs. And then Eric Mobley is just great with people. So I don't take the credit for the recruiting. We had the highest-ranked recruiting class in USC basketball history that are freshmen this year. Next year we have the number one player coming in the country for the first time in USC history. But I have a terrific coaching staff. So, yeah, I can take credit for my wife. I worked hard for that one. But my staff does an amazing job.
Yeah, they sure do. And you know, it's exciting to see what your program is, the way they're headed, your program's headed in the future, because you got some great players, and your young freshmen right now are playing great. The big fella is probably going to be the freshman of the year in the Pac-12, wouldn't you think?
Well, I think Nyeka Okongwu, our freshman, Isaiah Stewart, Arizona's got a couple very good freshmen. So the league is full of really good players, including the freshman class. This is probably the most talented freshman class the Pac-12 has had in 3 or 4 years.
I wanted to ask you about Ethan Anderson, because he was a UNLV commit, so we weren't too happy here when Marvin Menzies went bye-bye, and he decided to open things up. And you guys jumped on him really quickly, and it's paying off. I mean, he's getting better and better throughout the season.
Well, you know this, Joe, because you helped recruit the kid. So anytime you have a player that was he just improved every year in high school. So going into his senior year, he was a good player, and then his senior year he became a great player and became Los Angeles City Player of the Year, and he had signed with UNLV in November, and we were all looking at this, wow, we should have probably recruited him a little harder. Unfortunately, Marv did lose his job at UNLV. He had a really good year there. I think came in third or fourth, and the program was loaded with players, and And then when he left, they all the players left. So it was an unfortunate situation because I love Coach Menzies and what you guys have done at UNLV. I thought really building the program. But we were fortunate the fact that we could jump on Ethan quickly. We loved his winning attitude, his toughness, and what he brings just to a program in general. So he's had a terrific first half of his freshman year. In fact, at Pauley, he had 14 points the other night and played great.
It's a great place to do it in, too, being home and, you know, the home fans and people at UCLA. That was a great place for him. I was so proud of him because he's a great young man. He's got a great family, and he was a super, super person to recruit. Coach, talking about NBA basketball, you know, you were a shooting coach for the Bucks. You worked with the Celtics. How did you enjoy those days working in the NBA?
That was great. Mike Dunleavy gave me my first job as a Milwaukee Bucks assistant shooting coach, and then I was assistant coach for Rick Pitino with the Boston Celtics and then a consultant for a couple other teams and many players. So I spent many years off and on in the NBA as a full-time coach, a consultant, et cetera. So it was great to have different perspectives, learn what it takes to get to that level, and then also what it takes to improve as an individual player. And that was my job, to make players better. And so now you're in the college game. You're coaching guys that want to get to the NBA. And so you can give them insight and hold them accountable, but also instill a work ethic in them to tell. And we've done a great job as a staff here. My assistant coaches are terrific. We've put four guys in the NBA the last 2 years. So four guys. Jordan McLaughlin's with the Timberwolves, playing great. We have Chimezie Metu with the Spurs, Kevin Porter Jr. with the Cavaliers, and De'Anthony Melton's with the Grizzlies. And they're all doing very, very well as young professional NBA players. And we should have one or two more leave this year for the NBA. So my NBA experience was great. Now I have a family, three children, and a wife. So the college game is much more conducive to having a family, so you can build a program and stay in one spot.
How big was the NBA experience in facilitating and easing the move from Florida Gulf Coast? Because that's a big jump up from Florida Gulf Coast. You did a good job there, but jumping right into the Pac-12.
Well, basketball is just basketball, and what I mean by that is I started at the highest level of the NBA, and then I went to Florida State as an assistant for 5 years and learned the college game, and then I was ready to be a head coach. I was 41 years old and was fortunate to get the Florida Gulf Coast opportunity and went to the Sweet 16 and then came out here. So even though people give you opportunities in life, and I think if you look through your career and everybody listening, at some point someone has to believe in you. And a lot of people believed in me over the course of my basketball career. And from my NBA days to Leonard Hamilton hired me at Florida State to Florida Gulf Coast to USC. So you just have to be ready for your opportunity and work like crazy once you get that, because sometimes those opportunities only come around once in a while.
Coach, we appreciate a couple minutes. Good luck the rest of the way.
Well, hey, before we let you go, Coach, I'm going to tell you something. We get the best guests on this show, best in the country. Fran McCaffrey, Brian Dutcher, Larry Krystkowiak, Eric Musselman, Bruce Pearl, now you. And I'm going to tell you, everybody won their next game after they were on our station. You're going to beat Cal. And pressure. If you want to come on the following week when you go to Oregon, let us know.
That'd be great. We're going to need all the help we can get when we go to Oregon. But first, we're going to have to play a great basketball game at home Thursday night. So I do appreciate the superstition here, because we need it.
Coach, great talking to you, and good luck the rest of the way. We'll be rooting for you.
Thank you. Take care.
So a couple things on USC. One, not a shock to me that they're having a big season. He had some good returnees. Okongwu was awesome. I mean, he only had 4 points against UCLA, and they still won. The kid's averaging like 18 and 9. And he's an interesting study because I know he was an achiever, you know, playing basketball outside of high school. But you know who he played high school with, right? He went to Chino Hills. So he was playing with the Ball brothers. So you'd be watching him, and you're like, that guy looks like he has a little promise, but he never gets the freaking ball. You know, but he's turned out to be a hell of a player, and I don't know how long they're going to keep him, but he's got an NBA build already.
You know, the thing that they've done, which has been great for them, is they've been able to close the borders of getting those kids to go to USC. I mean, they got the number one and two player in the state last year, and then number seven with the big kid Max. And now they get the number one player in the state and the number one player in the country in this class, 2020. So they're getting the right guys. It's going to help bring fan support. I can remember years ago when we went out there and played, and I was at Texas Tech, and we played, and Kevin O'Neill was the coach. And there was nobody at the game. And I was like, this is not the USC basketball that I remember hearing about and all that type. But, you know, the thing with them right now is they got two really bad losses. They lost to Washington and Marquette by 54 points, and that's what hurts them in the net. When you look at the net, which is important for the NCAA tournament, they're at 68. KenPom has them at 73. And that's the reason why the net is so bad. They beat LSU, and their net is 28. You know, they beat a really good Harvard team. They beat TCU. Their net's 51. So that's where they're getting hurt in the net because they had those big losses. And that's a shame because they're having a good year. They got to keep winning, and they may have a chance to get in the NCAA tournament, but it's going to be hard.
And I mentioned Ethan Anderson during the interview. Kid who went to Fairfax.
Fairfax.
You guys had him committed last year, him and Josh Pierre-Lewis, yep. Right, who's at Temple now. And I think in both of those guys going elsewhere, I think UNLV missed out on the opportunity to have a couple of four-year players who were going to score, you know, the 1,000-point scorers. And with Anderson, he's intriguing, one, because he must have been a holdback, right? Because I think he's already 20. But you can see his build. He's a thick kid.
Stocky, thick.
But he knows his role. He's the kind of guy that you want to build a program around. And while, you know, Enfield and company are bringing in all these high-profile bigs, they know they're going to have a four-year guy there at point guard, and he's already taken control of the position.
He has, and I'm going to tell you a really good fun fact, and this is a great one. I was the first coach when we were at Texas Tech to offer him a scholarship when he was a ninth grader.
Okay.
We offered him a scholarship. I remember seeing his body and thinking to myself that he reminded me of Mark Jackson. You know, the old Knicks point guard, Mark Jackson, has a real savvy game, could really change speeds. He can do all those things, but he can score better than a Mark Jackson. But he's a great player, and he would have been great here in Las Vegas, and he was all gung-ho to come.
And
unfortunately things happen.
Well, I mean, you guys go bye-bye, but then the other part of it is, you can't turn around and hire a coach the next day. So there's that period of time where you don't have a coach, and, you know, Desiree Reed-Francois has got to do her due diligence in finding a coach. It takes a little while to get TJ in, and by then, you know, as Enfield said, he's like, oops, we should have recruited him. And they were on him like that. And same thing with Temple. Pierre Lewis's brother goes to Temple. So they were on it, and there was no chance for TJ and company to even – I mean, it was literally like 3 days. They were gone.
Yeah, they had no chance. And that's unfortunate because, you know, but now with that portal and everything else that goes around with that portal, guys are in there all the time. And you just kind of look through it. I tell you, it's like speed dating. You're trying to find a date for the night. You're trying to find a player. And there's already names in it right now. So it's unfortunate, but, you know, things happen for a reason. And you know, whatever was meant to be was be, and he ended up going to a good place.
Well, I wanted to ask you about one more thing. So USC lost Chuck O'Bannon, Jr. He just never got a shot there. He quickly committed to TCU. Is he going to come anywhere close to, you know, what people thought? Because he's a guy at a Bishop Gorman we're talking about. You know, in many lists, a top 50 player, if not a little bit higher. What do you think happened to him, and what happens moving forward?
You know, he had that big name, and I remember watching him when he was playing in AAU basketball, and he was a good player, very, very talented. But everybody always questioned his motor. You know, did he have that motor to go to the next level? You know, when you're coming from a family that has such a rich name in college basketball, you know, sometimes it's difficult. You know, when your dad was as good a player as he was, and it's
his
a
uncle.
Lot of pressure.
His Uncle Ed.
I mean, there's
my
a whole
God.
Bunch of them. Yeah.
Yeah, my God.
UCLA, right?
Yeah.
You know, they won a national championship, I can remember back in the day. But I think Charles would do good at TCU. I think they play a good style for him. And for whatever reason, it didn't work out. You know, when he saw all those freshmen coming in, they signed 6 freshmen last year at USC. And sometimes that kind of fuels up, like, well, where do I fit? And obviously he saw the type of players that they were bringing in and what they were coming in the future. He wanted to go somewhere and play. Every kid wants to play. You can never tell me there's a kid that doesn't want to play out there and sit the bench. And now they have the advantage with the portal. They go where they want to go and see what schools they could play more at. And I think TCU would probably be a bigger fit for him, or I should say a better fit.
On Twitter, @coach_Esposito, Joe will be back with us next Tuesday. I think you're going to be doing some morning spots later in the week, starting this week with Press Box. So good job. That was another good spot.
It's going to be fun, you know, because there's so much great things happening in college basketball. There's so much parity, and it's going to be a really fun February and March, no question.
All right, Joe. Good job.
Thanks, buddy.
We'll come back here final hour at Pizza Rock, Green Valley Ranch. The second period of the Golden Knights game has started. Still scoreless. You still have time to come down and enjoy happy hour and watch the rest of the game.
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas.